Okay.
All right, well, this is second part of Ruth and the Days of Judges. And so today we're going to look more at Judges. It's November 26, 2017. And so we'll start just to get in the first chapter of Ruth, the first verse, just to kind of give a little introduction. Now it came to pass in the days when the judges ruled that there was a famine in the land, and a certain man of Bethlehem, Judah, went to sojourn in the country of Moab, he and his wife and his two sons. So we're going to talk today about the days of judges and what Israel was like in the days of judges. And we're also going to contrast that, the good characters that we talked about last week, with some of these that are not so good. And a common theme in the book of Judges was that there was no king in the land of Israel, and every man did what was right in his own eyes. Right. So that's what we're going to look at today. That said, brother, if you could, you have Numbers 32. Mm-hmm. Brother Marvin's going to read Numbers 32, verses 20 to 23.
Numbers 32, verses 20 through 23. Can everybody get there while they're doing it? I'll write it down. Numbers 32, 20 to 23. Okay. And Moses said unto them, if ye will do this thing, if ye will go armed before the Lord to war, and will go all of you armed over Jordan before the Lord, until he have driven out his enemies from before him, and the land be subdued before the Lord, then afterward ye shall return and be guiltless before the Lord, and before Israel, and this land shall be your possession before the Lord. But if ye will not do so, behold, ye have sinned against the Lord, and be sure your sin will find you out.
Mm-hmm. So that key verse is verse 23. If you have not done those things, then your sin will find you out. And we see that this is Moses exhorting the half-tribe of Manasseh and Reuben to go on into the promised land and fight with the rest of Israel to take the promised land. This is the land where Ruth lived in. It was taken. We saw that they did basically subdue the land, but they never fulfilled the command of Moses in completely eradicating the land from all the people that were there. That was the judgment of God. We get a lot of flack as Christians for these verses, but the truth of the matter is the people in the land of Canaan were wicked people. They were murdering their kids. They were doing all kinds of wicked things. Honestly, they looked a lot like us now as a nation, America. They were putting their children in the fire and doing just so many wicked things that God was to the point that he wanted to destroy them. That's what he wanted to happen. So, it is what it is.
I'm sorry, brother. Where did the recorder go?
Oh, it's right here.
Okay, that's fine. I think it didn't drop down or something.
No. Like that. It's just he was reading. So, if you look at Judges chapter 2, we'll see what it says. Now, if you wanted in your own time to read Judges 1, you'll see what I said, that each one of the tribes went to their respective places. They fought as a whole what they believed to be enough to take over to the land in general. They had subdued the land, but they never completely got rid of everybody out of their own lands. Each one failed in that place within themselves, each tribe in their own in the places that they inherited. So, if you got Judges chapter 2, we'll see that in the sixth verse it says, and when Joshua had let the people go, the children of Israel went every man unto his inheritance to possess the land. And the people served the Lord all the days of Joshua and all the days of the elders that outlived Joshua, who had seen all the great works of the Lord that he did for Israel. So they were obedient to Joshua, and they were, as far in terms of living, they were living holy before God in that time of Joshua. But as soon as Joshua died and some of the elders that were with Joshua passed away, then they slipped back into the ways, and the people that they had failed to get rid of started to taint their lives and bring temptation into their lives. And that's what we have to be careful of even today, that the people that don't understand holiness, you know, they're going to try to tempt us to get out of living holy. There's a beauty of holiness. That's what we talked a lot about last week, you see. So we see that good leaders will keep us and lead us into a good life, you know. And so that's what we see in Joshua. He was his character was always faithful, always. He sat under Moses no matter what. When all the other people rebelled against Moses, it was Joshua that stood with him. When the 12 spies went out, it was Joshua and Caleb that came back and said, I don't mind what I see. I know God said he'd deliver it. We can overtake them because we have God on our side. It was Joshua that was faithful. The other 10 spies were the ones that caused division in the camp and caused the people to doubt, you see. So a good leader will instill faith into the people. And then through that faith, the people will serve and the whole place can be blessed because of that faith. So if we look at the people were obedient to Joshua, but they never did rid themselves of the former inhabitants of the land, and these people became a snare. So I get that out of the second and third verse. It says, "And ye shall make no league with the inhabitants of this land. Ye shall throw down their altars, but ye have not obeyed my voice. Why have you done this? Wherefore I also said, I will not drive them out from before you, but they shall be as thorns in your side, and their gods shall be a snare unto you." So this became the pattern that we see in the books of Samuel and Kings, and even readdressed in the books of Chronicles. The pattern is that if you look at the 22nd verse down at the end in the 23rd, it says that through them I may prove Israel whether they will keep the way of the Lord to walk therein, and their fathers did keep it or not. You see, if their leaders, their elders kept it, then it's going to pass down. Not always, but as soon as they detract from it, that passes down too. We learn from our elders. So if our elders are good, we learn good. If they're not good, we don't learn good, right? Therefore, the Lord left those nations without driving them out hastily, neither delivered he them into the hand of Joshua. So if there's anything that Joshua could be said against him, just the fact that he wasn't able to ever get rid of all of this thing. But we still see that Joshua was still faithful, and he was still believing that God could do it. You know, he stood in a place that it could be done. So that's a good leader, walking in faith, not in sight. But this pattern is all through, and it shows the choices that we have before us. This all reflects the main theme of the whole Bible, really. You know, God is setting before each one of us what's right and what's wrong. We can choose life or we can choose death. You know, he gives it to us all simple. And he gives us these precepts in the Bible so we can have deeper understanding. He grants us leaders, you know. from then till now, His word has never gone out of the earth. It's always been kept by someone. Even, you know, look back at the story of Noah, right? There was nothing but evil in the world, but God found favor in Noah. And He saved that 8 people and kept His word even through those 8 people. So we see that choice has been passed down through. And that's what we're going to look at today. Is last week we talked about, we reflected on the characters that made good choices. And this week we're going to look at those that made bad choices. So for that, we're going to look at the first judge we're going to look at. There were 15 judges, I believe I counted, counting Eli and Samuel. And one of the judges is Samson. And that's who we're going to look at today. So if you'll move over to the 13th chapter of Judges, we'll meet Samson. I'm sure we've all heard at least something about Samson before, but we're going to look at him in light of Boaz, and we're going to try to contrast the two characters. So if you'll turn to Judges 13, we'll start there. And in Boaz, though, we saw a godly character. And he had the means. I was thinking about this a lot this week. I was wondering a place I had spoke last week about the genuine piety in Boaz. And, you know, I was thinking that I wondered if I really brought that out deep enough last week, but I think the reason being maybe is to bring it out today. You know that we know that Boaz had the means to. He could have thrown money at Ruth. He could have done a different. He could have went a different way in that. He had some money. He could have, you know, used some flash with her. One or to him in his own way, in his own means. But instead, in Ruth 2 and 12, he said, The Lord recompense thy work, and a full reward be given thee of the Lord God of Israel, under whose wings thou art come to trust. So he had seen the trust in Ruth, and he wanted to test to see if that was genuine in her. And the way he did that was instead of, well, I'm just going to do everything to help you. He said, the Lord is going to help you. And he gave the opportunity for her to continue to serve the Lord. And we know that the Lord did help her and did even use Boaz to do it. But even in placing himself when he said, well, there's one closer than I. And he put that, like we talked last week about putting it on the altar. All of that shows his trust in God. That God is going to do what's right in this thing, and I believe it, you know? And that's what we have to do. Samson, on the other hand, he had been born probably from his youth, from small child, told that, you know, this angel came and prophesied about you, and you're a Nazarite from birth, and you're going to be a great, you know, they probably, I don't know, but I mean, you know, he seems like he had a little bit of arrogance to him because, see, he got that from somewhere, and I wonder if that wouldn't be it. You know, it'd be something if an angel came and spoke about you as a child, that, and you heard that, that might change your mindset and make you think you're a little bit, maybe think a little more highly of yourself than you ought to. And that's what we have here in Samson. See, Samson threw his weight around. If you'll look at the, that is the, the 14th chapter. In the 13th chapter, talks about the angel and the meeting with Manoah. But 14th chapter, the first verse says, Samson went down to Timnah and saw a woman in Timnah of the daughters of the Philistines. And he came up and told his father and mother and said, I have seen a woman in Timnah, of the daughters of the Philistines. Now, therefore, get her for me to wife. So, unlike Boaz, who let that in the hands of God, Samson went to his parents and he said, get me that woman. I want her to be my wife. The third verse says, then his father and his mother said unto him, is there never a woman among the daughters of thy brethren, among all thy people, that thou goest to take a wife of the uncircumcised Philistines? And Samson said unto his father, get her for me, for she pleaseth me well. You see, he's throwing his weight around. He's like, that's what I want right there. You know, and they're trying to warn him that, you know, you're going to bring trouble. You're going to be unevenly yoked. You're going to, you know, I'm using our terms, but that's what, the, you know, they're recognizing that this is going to bring trouble into the whole thing. But Samson wants what he wants, and he got the marriage that he wanted, and it didn't last. Go figure. You don't take godly counsel. And if you look down at the 20th verse, in the end of it all, but Samson's wife was given to his companion, whom had used to as his friend. See? So that wife that he wanted, he lost and was given to his friend. Because I'm going to go over part of that. You know, he had given the riddle. He'd ate the honey out of the dead lion. He had broken every single rule up to cutting his hair. By the time the end of this story was over, he has done everything except cut his hair. All the Nazirite vows he had broken, every single part of the vow throughout this time. You see? So unlike Boaz, who tried to do what was right and trusted in God, Samson, he just wanted everything that he wanted, and he must have thought he was really something, you know. Now, God still used him. This is the tricky part of this of this teaching. And there's a lot of people that see the something that God did in their life, and maybe he did, but that doesn't necessarily mean that he is endorsing your lifestyle. God does things in our lives sometimes for his name's sake. And that's what we have to recognize. That on the whole, Samson's life was a wreck. You know? Yes, he delivered his people from the Philistines through all of the things that he did wrong, ended up him killing a lot of the Philistines. So it worked out good for Israel, but it worked out worse and worse for him. Till he ends up at the end of the whole thing, after Delilah. You've heard the story of Delilah, how she tricked him into telling him where his strength lies. And here he is, waking up, they're cutting his hair, he has no strength. The Spirit of the Lord departed from him, you see, because he allowed his hair to be cut. But I think it was deeper than any of the other things. It was because God, he never really had a love for God. He was never obedient to God through the whole testimony. Up till the end, now he realizes that now they've cut his hair, they plucked his eyes out. If you skip over to the 16th chapter, the 21st verse says, but the Philistines took him and put out his eyes and brought him down to Gaza and bound him with fetters of brass and did grind in the prison house. So now he's a slave to the Philistines. And he's got his eyes put out, and they got him pushing a grinder to grind corn or whatever they're grinding, you know, in a prison. So we see that the Spirit of the Lord had departed from him at that time when they cut his hair, and he couldn't overtake them like he had done all those times before. You know, he really thought it was him doing all that. He started to fail to recognize that it was God the whole time giving him the strength to fight all of those people. So the judges were used to deliver the people out of the hands. That's what it says. Judges 2 and 16 says that, "Nevertheless, the Lord hath given them judges to deliver them out of the hands that spoiled them." You see, the judges were being used to deliver God's people so that he could carry out his word. It's important we get this because, like I said, a lot of times Christians think that they're special before God as if they're spoiled or as if they're something. But God loves each and every one of us, but he also loves us corporately, and he knows the trouble that we bring causes trouble for everybody. So he can only go so far with each one of us in chastising us. At some point, he takes his hand off of us, just like he did with Samson here. So here's Samson in this prison. If you look down at the 24th verse, it says, "And when the people saw him," skip up to 23. "Then the lords of the Philistines gathered them together to offer a great sacrifice unto Dagon their god, and to rejoice, for they said, 'Our God hath delivered Samson our enemy into our hand.' And when the people saw him, they praised their God, for they said, 'Our God hath delivered into our hands our enemy and the destroyer of our country, which slew many of us.'" So now they're having a party, and they've got Samson out in the middle of it, and they're torturing him for fun. Basically, it says here in the 25th verse, it says, "And it came to pass when their hearts were merry, that they said, 'Call for Samson, that he may make us sport.' And they called for Samson out of the prison house, and he made them sport, and they set him between the pillars. And Samson said unto the lad that held him by the hand, 'Suffer me that I may feel the pillars whereupon the house standeth, that I may lean upon them.'" And Samson, skip down to the 28th verse, it says, "And Samson called unto the Lord and said, 'O Lord God, remember me, I pray thee, and strengthen me, I pray thee, only this once, O God, that I may be at once avenged of the Philistines for my two eyes.' And Samson took hold of the two middle pillars upon which the house stood, and on which it was borne up, of the one with his right hand and the other with his left. And Samson said, 'Let me die with the Philistines.' And he bowed himself with all his might, and the house fell upon the lords and upon all the people that were therein. So the dead which he slew at his death were more than they which he slew in his life." You see, that's a bad testimony. It's a good testimony for God, because God's people were delivered and God's will was accomplished ultimately. But for Samson, you see, it didn't have to go that way. And that's why we need to consider our ways. You know, there's a way that seems right, and the end is destruction. You see? We can justify things in our own mind if we don't lean so close to God. That's what Boaz was doing. He genuinely trusted in God. That's what Samson refused to do. If Samson was told to do something, he did the opposite. Just to say that he could, you know. We're given liberty, but we're not given liberty to be a stumbling block. But we should serve each other in love. So, that's the character of Samson. And if you look at Proverbs 11 and 6, really sums that up. Says, "The righteousness of the upright shall deliver them, but the transgressors shall be taken by their own naughtiness." The New King James says, "The righteousness of the upright will deliver them, but the unfaithful will be caught by their lust." And I thought that was a good way to sum up the two characters. We see that Boaz is famous for his faithfulness, and he's part of the line of Jesus. You see, line of David and the line of Jesus. And so he'll be, as long as there's a Bible, there'll be people to see the goodness of Boaz. At the same time, even though Samson is mentioned in the Hall of Faith in Hebrews 11, and it may be ultimately just for that last prayer, that at the end of his life he remembered God and said, "Oh God, forgive me," and you know. But we don't have to do, you know, that's a bad testimony for us. Why would we want that, you know? When we could have a good life, we can make that prayer now and stand in it from here on out. We don't have to turn. We don't have to sin. We really don't. So, that said, let's look at the next character I want to look at is Micah. And so for that, we'll go to Judges 17. Every time we sin, the proverb says a sin is a reproach to any nation. So every time we sin, we destroy something. And we make it harder and harder to get back to the standard. Every inch we veer from that standard, it's going to be harder to get back. You know? And this is what God's working with in the course of giving us free will. You know? This is one of God's... to us, it's a challenge. To Him, I don't think He's perplexed about it. He knows how to get a thing done. But it is... it's part of His glory, really, that He can use these us ultimately in His plan. So here's the character of Micah. Micah is a thief and an idolater. And we're going to see even how the priesthood was at this time. So there was a man, verse 1, there was a man of Mount Ephraim whose name was Micah, and he said unto his mother, "The 1,100 shekels of silver that were taken from thee, about which thou cursed, and spakest of also in mine ears, behold, the silver is with me. I took it." And his mother said, "Blessed be thou of the Lord, my son." This shows you how perverse this nation and the many people in it had become. Her son just said, "I stole your money." And she said, "Blessed be thou of the Lord, my son." Why would she say that? That doesn't... But it goes on to show even more. And when he had restored the 1,100 shekels of silver to his mother said, "I had wholly dedicated the silver unto the Lord from my hand for my son to make a graven image and a molten image. Now, therefore, I will restore it unto thee." So she gave him back the money that he stole, and it says that yet he restored the money unto his mother. His mother took 200 shekels of silver, gave them to the founder, who made thereof a graven image and a molten image, and they were in the house of Micah. And the man Micah had an house of gods, and made an ephod and teraphim, and consecrated one of his sons, who became his priest. So he made him a house of gods. He made him the dress to wear, and he consecrated his own son. Said, "Well, you're the priest now." So he built him a house of everything, and he's doing what there's you see in the sixth chapter verse there. In those days, there was no king in Israel, but every man did that what was right in his own eyes. And there was a young man out of Bethlehem, Judah, of the family of Judah. So this is out of the same place where Naomi and Boaz and Ruth and all of them were dwelling, who was a Levite, and he sojourned there. And the man departed out of the city from Bethlehem, Judah, to sojourn where he could find a place. And he came to Mount Ephraim, to the house of Micah, and as he journeyed. And Micah said unto him, Whence comest thou? And he said unto him, I am a Levite of Bethlehem, Judah, and I go to sojourn where I may find a place. And Micah said unto him, Dwell with me, and be unto me a father and a priest, and I will give thee 10 shekels of silver by the year, and a suit of apparel, and thy victuals. So the Levite went in. And skip down to verse 13. Then said Micah, Now know I that the Lord will do me good, seeing I have a Levite to be my priest. So, see, they're looking at the surface things. They're not looking at he hasn't thought anything about the fact that he's been stealing, that he's making idols. He's not thinking about any of the things that he's doing wrong, but because a Levite actually just wandered into his camp, now he's saying, oh, well, God must be with me. You know, there's so many people right now that make religious things to be in the place of the actual Spirit of God. When the Spirit of God comes in your life, he'll anoint your life, and he'll bring good things into your life. But, you know, the devil can bring good things into your life too, you see. So there's got to be a standard to which we know whether a thing is good or not, you know. So this priest was for hire, even unto idolaters. That says a whole lot about how perverse the land had become. He wasn't concerned about Micah's idolatry. He wasn't doing what he was told to do as a priest in Exodus. Hold on 1 second. Exodus, it is 19 and 6. It says, And ye shall be unto me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. These words which thou shalt speak unto the children of Israel. That's not the one I was looking for. But it talks about how... I'm sorry about that. No rabbit trails. It talks about how the priest ought to be bringing people to holiness. You know, we're supposed to be, and as Christians, that's what we're called to be as well, to call the people to holiness. Here this priest came into the people and saw what he saw and didn't say anything about any of the things that were wrong there. That this man can just make his own house and put some idols in it and make a ephod of his own, and you know, that's just fine and that's all okay. But why did he do it? Because he's going to get paid for that. You see, this is a hireling. That's what we have way too many of those today in the church. So look down at the 18th chapter. We'll see what ends up with happening with Micah. The Danites came into this house, and they passed through, and they saw Micah. And, starting in the third verse, it says, When they were by the house of Micah, they knew the voice of the young man, the Levite, and they turned in thither, and said unto him, Who brought thee hither, and what makest thou in this place? And what hast thou here? And he said unto them, Thus and thus dealeth Micah with me, and he hath hired me, and I am his priest. So, they ask him, they're about to go into a battle, paraphrase what's going on here. They asked him to whether they'll succeed or whether they won't. He tells them to go and that the battle will be at their hand. And so, don't you know that a hireling is always going to tell you what you want to hear? But in this case, it actually did come to pass. And so, they won the battle and they came back again thinking God's with them. Just because you have success doesn't mean God's with you. You know, we have. If we want to know God is with us, it ought to be. There's an easy way to tell. Have we denied ourselves, picked up our cross, followed Christ? That's the way Jesus told us to follow Him. You know, if we hereby we know that we love Him, we keep His commandments. We're not breaking His commandments and saying we love God. All of these people are breaking His commandments because they came back, they took the priest, they took the idols, they took the dress, they took everything in the temple that Micah had built and left Micah there stranded, you know, with nothing. All that he had put in was stolen from him by this tribe of Danite, the Danites. That those idols continually became a stumbling block in Dan. I think it's Jeroboam eventually down the line that brought back and brought the golden calf to the tribe of Dan. So they had already, you see, this was the seed of that was planted even then, and it carries out. And we know that the seed of sin, it enters into our heart and it comes out of our body and it brings forth death. You see? So Psalm 37 and 7 says, "Rest in the Lord and wait patiently for Him. Do not fret because of the man who brings wicked schemes to pass." See, the wicked can prosper for a moment, but as the first verse of that same psalm says, they'll be cut down like grass.
What was that psalm, brother?
That's Psalm 37, the first verse and the seventh verse. So at the end, we see in Judges 18, 19, and 20, "And they said unto him, Hold thy peace, lay thine hand upon thy mouth, and go with us, and be to us a father and a priest. Is it better for thee to be a priest unto the house of one man, or that thou be a priest unto a tribe and a family in Israel? And the priest's heart was glad, and he took the ephod, and the teraphim, and the graven image, and went into the midst of the people." You see how that hireling, he got mad, he got happy. Wow, I got a bigger congregation now. I was just the priest of one house. Now I got a whole land. And what did they tell him? You know, don't turn your eye to what we're about to do. We're going to steal from this man, and we're doing this. Don't say anything about what's wrong. Well, there you go. That's a hireling. So, this is the progression of wickedness that came into the land. They would have these judges all through the book. There would, if they had a good leader, the people would do what's right. But as soon as that leader died, they'd go right back to their evil ways. The fifth point is the reflections of Sodom. And for that, we're going to look at the 19th chapter of Judges. And I'm going to tell another quick story of this chapter. A man had a concubine, and the concubine took off and played a harlot, and he went to get her. She had went astray. She was in the land of Benjamin. So he went to bring her back home. And when he was on his way back, they needed a place to stay over the night, and they had lodged in the land of Benjamin. And so it came to pass that they saw, the men of that city had saw the man come into the town. And they, it says in the 22nd verse, "Now as they were making their hearts merry, behold, the men of the city, certain sons of Belial, beset the house round about and beat at the door, and spake to the master of the house, the old man, saying, Bring forth the man that came into thine house, that we may know him. And the man, the master of the house went out unto them and said unto them, Nay, my brethren, nay, I pray you, do not so wickedly, seeing that this man is come into mine house. Do not this folly. Behold, here is my daughter, a maiden, and his concubine. Them I will bring out now, and humble ye them, and do with them what seemeth good unto you. But unto this man do not so vile a thing. But the men would not hearken to him, so the man took his concubine, and brought her forth unto them. And they knew her, and abused her all the night till the morning. And when the day began to spring, they let her go. So, this is the same, a reflection of what took place on the night before Sodom and Gomorrah were destroyed. The angels had gone into the house of Lot, and they did the same thing. So, this act, the woman was killed in this whole thing, and they sent, I know it sounds gross, but they sent parts of her to each of the tribes to show this horrible thing that had happened. Mm-hmm. How far we have come and how evil we've become, you see. Now, sometimes when we're out preaching, it's the evil of the sinners when they see themselves doing something really wicked. I spoke yesterday, the man flipping us off. I got to wonder if he won't come to his senses at some point. Like, man, did I just do that in front of my child?
Right.
You know, if there's any part of goodness in him, it's gonna come to him, whether it be a quiet time somewhere. Right. You see? We suffer these things as Christians. Blessed are ye that are persecuted for my name's sake. We suffer these things. He said, be not surprised when these fiery trials come upon you, as if some strange thing happened to you. As Christians, we're going to face these things as our nation goes deeper into depravity. How much more we're wicked today than this was back then, you see? So this reflection caused the children of Israelites to realize how low they had sank. And they rose up in a civil war against the tribe of Benjamin. But even in that, they still couldn't do right. You see, sin starts out such a small thing. It starts out such a small thing. You think it's no big deal. Nobody's watching. But it ends up a big thing and everybody sees it. Your sins will find you out. You see? It's better we take heed of the good characters in the Bible. Try to look at them. These judges are, these people mentioned in this book are nobody to model our life after, you know? Other than things not to do, you know? We don't want to be delivered out of the hand that's, the devil wants to spoil our lives, you know? So, it ended up in the 20th chapter, it becomes a civil war. This war between the Benjamites and all the 11 other tribes continued to the point that all of them that were involved in it had made a vow that they would not mix with the tribe of Benjamin. They rashly made that vow, and then they wiped out most of the tribe to the point that they had to compromise in order to keep the tribe, because they knew that they would be sinning against God if they completely wiped the tribe out. But they went too far in their judgment. And then they made in the 21st chapter a way to bring that together. That was the 22nd and the 23rd verse of the 21st chapter. They called a festival together, and it says, and see and behold, if the daughters of Shiloh come out of the out to dance and dances. This tribe that was in Shiloh hadn't made that vow, so the idea is in order to keep their vow and to still keep Benjamin going, this is what they decided to do. And see, and behold, if the daughters of Shiloh come out to dance in dances, then come ye out of the vineyards and catch you every man his wife of the daughters of Shiloh and go to the land of Benjamin. And it shall be when their fathers or brethren come unto us to complain, that we will say unto them, be favorable unto them for our sakes, because we reserve not to each man his wife in the war, for ye did not give unto them at this time that ye should be guilty. And the children of Benjamin did so, and took them wives according to their numbers of them that danced, whom they caught. And they went and returned unto their inheritance, and repaired the cities, and dwelt in them. So that it was important for them to keep the tribe of Benjamin, even though they had sinned. And, you know, God in his mercy, he worked through this, but I don't believe this was his, you know, this wasn't what he would have to have done for them to lay in wait and take these women, you know. That's just it. When, like I said, it starts out really small, and then it becomes something that you can't get out of, you know. The wages of sin is death, but the gift of life, God, is life eternal. And that's the last point that I want to look at. I talked a little bit last week of Tamar, who is named in the 12th verse of the 4th chapter of Ruth. Her son, Phares, and the line went down to Boaz. So if you'll look at the 38th chapter of Genesis. And just a little bit about this story. There's a lot of stories here, but to sum it up, Tamar had one son of Judah, and he died. And then the next son, she took her as a wife, and he died. So Judah was scared to give her his last son, his third son. So Tamar had devised a plan in her own mind, as she knew that Judah was going down to town. She dressed as a harlot, and she allowed him to be with her. They kept the... he had left for a pledge his staff and his signet. But when he sent his friend with the goat that he'd promised her, she wasn't there. But she had the signet and the staff. So here he's lost his signet and the staff. And the 24th verse says, this is some months after, it came to pass about 3 months after that it was told Judah, saying, Tamar, thy daughter-in-law, also hath played the harlot. And also, behold, she is with child by whoredom. And Judah said, bring her forth and let her be burnt. When she was brought forth, she sent to her father-in-law, saying, by the man whose these are am I with child. And she said, discern, I pray thee, whose are these, the signet and bracelets and staff? And Judah acknowledged them and said, she hath been more righteous than I, because I gave her not to Shelah my son, and he knew her again no more. So this is the son that eventually became the line of Boaz. They're brought together. You see that this is it's a redeeming of all the sins that we have. Yes, they can be redeemed, but they still cause damage. They still cause much damage, you know. Yes, there's redemption at the cross, but that's no should we continue in sin that grace would abound? God forbid. Yes, there's redemption, but it doesn't fix, you know, it says that, you know, Exodus 34 says that God is merciful and long-suffering, but in no wise clears the guilty. You know, it's not going to fix everything that's damaged when you sin. This thing that Judah did, Tamar, though it was obviously wrong what she did, but if you look at, in a way, you look at Proverbs 6, Proverbs 6, 30 and 31. It says, men do not despise a thief if he steal to satisfy his soul when he is hungry, but if he be found, he shall restore sevenfold. He shall give all the substance of his house. So the reason I bring that verse up is just to show that Tamar did wrong, but what she did, the reason that she did wrong was for a right reason. It doesn't justify what she did. But and there still has to be something paid for what she did. But she was given mercy, as in the penalty that she should have got was to be stoned to death. But that wasn't what she got. She was given mercy because she did it for a right reason. And that's the trouble with sin. When we start to sin, just like the Civil War that took place, they started to do what's right, but they have to do what's wrong just to try to make something right come out of it. And that, you know, it gets us in this mixed up, we're so bound up we don't know what to do anymore. You see, we don't have to go through all that. When it enters your mind, you can hold that thought captive right then. We don't have to go to that end. Holding captive whatever, anything that exalts itself above Christ, we can cast it down. Every imagination. We can get a hold of it before it even starts. It doesn't have to go to all of this. You see? Ultimately, this is the type of thing that took place till they begged Samuel, the last of the judges, to give him a king. And then they had a king. So, if the king was good, the people did good. They prospered. If the king was bad, the people were in famine. They were in trouble. You see? But if we, as Christian, especially as Christian families, can really learn how to model that what Ruth shows, the book of Ruth, as a Christian family. Each one was looking out for the other. You know, Ruth was looking out for Naomi. Naomi was looking out for Ruth when she begged her and Orpah, don't follow me because I don't have anything to promise you. Each one was looking out for the other. Boaz looking out for the whole thing. Oh, wow, what a great character Ruth was, you know. He heard that she was a virtuous woman. She wanted so much to make sure her mother-in-law was fed that even when he brought her to the table and gave her bread, she didn't eat all of it. She put some of it away and took it home for Naomi. Each one of them was looking out for each other. And it's that selfless, Christ-like love. That's what can hold this us together and Christians everywhere if we just exemplify that one thing. None of these other bad things, these perversities, don't have to come into play. We see they're all around us in this nation we live in right now. Because people refuse judges. That's the number one thing we hear on the street. You can't judge me. They don't like judges. Judges are a good thing. They bring us out of the hand that spoils us. It's a good thing to be judged of God. If I'm doing wrong, why would I want to keep doing that? You see? So, I just want us to look at these books and this is what is being taught and kind of reflect on what it means for each one of us. Each one of us are in different places in our life right now. But, you know, for the young men, how can you be a leader in your community? You know, you have to model this Christ, this life of Christ, having the mind of Christ, you know, for the people around you when you go to work, wherever you are. You have to, you're the one, it ought to be that you're the one that people look up to for when they have a question of what's good or bad. You know, they see that quality in you. And, you know, for the young women, that's what you want to look for in a husband, is somebody that is going to be a leader, somebody that's submitted to God. Not just somebody that's, you know, maybe loud talking or knows how to give orders, but somebody that's submitted to God. He knows how to take orders, you know. He knows how to live in the anointing of God. He knows how to move in the power of God. That's the only thing that's going to heal our nation. Whether there comes a revival to America, I don't know whether there is or not. I have hope because the God I know is a redeemer. He's a restorer. So I live in hope. If I don't see it, I don't see it. I don't know. But I'm going to believe in that promise of a better land. Ultimately, I know I'm going to get it in heaven. But I believe it could even take place here, that we could turn the hearts of the key people enough to bring some reform and revival even to this nation. But ultimately, whether that come to pass or not, each one of us can make that happen in our own lives, in our own little circle. You see? And it all comes to the crux of all of it is sin. When sinners enters your mind, what do you do with it? Do you hold it captive? Do you overcome it by the blood of Jesus? Or do you go on and give in to it? And, well, you know, God will forgive me. Well, there's going to be repercussions to that. Yeah. It will no wise clear the guilty. Your sin will find you out. Right. So, that's it.
Okay. Thank you. Have any questions, objections, ideas? I did have one question, brother, about the tribe of Benjamin, mm-hmm. and that civil war idea and the reflections of Sodom and Gomorrah point that you brought back in Judges 19. And so because the traveler chopped up his concubine and sent it out to all the tribes of Israel as a testimony against Israel, they would allow this wicked thing that was done by the tribe of Benjamin to his, what would have been him, his wife and his concubine, is that right?
I don't see his wife in the story, but...
Oh, just him and his concubine,
I think he went, she had ran away.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So that was the question I had. It was just that this traveler was seeking a way to give a testimony, and this sparked outrage among the other 11 tribes that they sought to destroy Benjamin and isolate them.
Yeah, right. Yeah, so it stirred up what basically became a civil war, and all the people in the heat of the battle had made a vow that they would not mix with Benjamin, that Benjamin should be cursed. But then they realized they couldn't really make that claim. You know, that would be against God,
right?
To utterly destroy Benjamin.
God had established Benjamin in the land that they lived in,
because God had established him.
Yeah.
So, you know,
there's a conflict here in them trying to right, according to their view, right this wrong.
Right, and that's the conflict that only enters in when we sin. You know, that conflict wouldn't be there without that. So,
So Benjamin's sin and the 11 tribes, their kind of high-mindedness about how they would deal with Benjamin.
Right.
Even though it was a very horrible story, that was a horrible thing that was done.
Yeah.
To this concubine was a person that God had created.
Exactly.
Right. So.
So, but you know, you see that same concept that you're talked about also throughout Kings and through Samuel as well. Mostly Kings, though, when the land of Israel would do evil, then he would raise up another nation to fight against them. Mm-hmm. And that nation would end up becoming proud and high-minded, and then he would use another nation to destroy that nation. Mm-hmm. So, you know,
they would be going farther in their punishment than God wanted them to do.
Going farther than God wanted them to do. Exactly.
Yeah. There's one thing he said, too, that they had to do wrong things to make things right.
Right.
That's sin doesn't make sense. And so,
yeah.
And you make sense, try to make sense out of, I got to do 10 things wrong to make one thing right.
Right.
Hey, what's going to happen from that? I mean, what kind of foundation are you going to have if you're not doing everything right?
Yeah.
And so one of the things you had said, too, was about how they didn't have good judges and the judgment of God was not in the land. And Isaiah 121 says, how has this faithful city become a harlot? It was full of judgment.
Mm-hmm.
Righteousness lodged in it, but now murderers.
Yeah.
And so that's what's happening here in America. They're putting up these wicked judges.
Yeah.
The Supreme Court making laws that they shouldn't be making.
Mm-hmm.
They're not supposed to make laws anyways, but that's neither here nor there. But
right.
They're putting these wicked judges in, hey, Roe versus Wade, mm-hmm. homosexual marriage. Mm-hmm. I mean, God's judgment used to be in America.
Yeah.
It's leaving.
And, that's right.
We have some hope. Well, we do have some hope. So there are still Christians in this country
that
are standing up. So.
Yeah, I just heard a story this morning, a news story about, you know, Al Franken and all the Judge Roy Moore and and all the accusations going back and forth, and that Senator Al Franken, he's the, is he Wisconsin or Minnesota? What is?
I think it's Minnesota.
Senator from Minnesota, I think, yeah. And he has had 270 sexual abuse complaints against him that were all covered up, and the settlements were paid for by taxpayer money.
Wow.
So instead of Al Franken getting sued by the person and Al Franken paying out of his own pay and his own thing, our tax money goes to cover his sin.
Right.
And he continues on in this, and Al Franken was one of the guys that was going after Judge Roy Moore hot. And all Al Franken's been doing is not denying it, just apologizing for it.
Right.
Just the Senate trying to keep some of the righteous out.
See the double.
Well, the
standard.
Senators, now think of this. Now, the senators are a form of judges.
They,
they're judges in the land, just like the judges in the Supreme Court. These guys have to judge and make laws, and that's what judges did in Israel and et cetera. So, okay. Yeah. That's how corrupt we've become, and bad things are that we cannot trust anybody in the government. Practically.
Yeah. Okay. And if someone trustworthy, as Chief Justice Moore it would appear to be in many other cases, I don't, you know, I really don't believe these accusations.
Oh, I don't either, brother. I don't mean to imply that I was. I just brought him up because.
But I mean, I don't know. Ultimately, I mean.
God knows.
God knows.
God definitely knows.
But he would appear to be trustworthy. Mm-hmm. And. You see how hard they fight to keep him away from.
Right.
I don't want someone righteous in there, someone that's going to make some righteous decisions and try to overturn their law, wicked laws they've put in place. And so that's part of it.
Okay. Anybody else? Thanks a lot.